Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Dusty and Cam in the morning.
This was never about money for us. It was about us against the system. That system that kills the human spirit. We stand for something.
With Dusty Hera.
I've had the old bull, now I want the young calf.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
Play action from Mark Bulger, firing into the end zone. Cam Cleland's got it! Touchdown Rams! With 2:11 to play, a 17-yard connection. Mark Bulger to Cam Cleland.
On 1080 The Fan.
Seven o'clock, right on the nose on your Wednesday morning. Dusty Hera, Cam Cleland with you. If you missed our first hour, you can check it out on the Les Schwab Tires podcast at 1080thefan.com. We talked to redheads, baseball, tall people, and the respect card. Kind of ran the gamut there. Mm-hmm. This hour, it will be locked, loaded, and full of college football, mainly Ducks, Huskies, as we will give you audio of Mario Cristobal, Chris Peterson.
Just another week.
No, it's not.
It's just another week.
That is worse than the no respect card.
Just another week for us.
You know it's not.
No, just another week.
He knows it's not.
Game week.
Adam Jude, as Buck just told you, of the Seattle Times, will join us at 7:30. We have the text police chiming in on the Better You Today text line 55305. Jude is a Washingtonian who went to Oregon and now works in Seattle covering the Huskies.
So where does the allegiance lie?
Well, I'm going to ask him, like, what kind of intel he's sending back down to Eugene as a spy.
It's true.
You know?
It's very true.
He's got to. Mm-hmm. Isn't that part of your job?
It's of course what you do.
As an alumni?
I would.
I wonder how many...
Report.
Like, you ever think of this? Like, Justin Wilcox, right? He was an Oregon Duck, and then he became the defensive coordinator for UW, right? Yeah. We're starting to see that more and more where these guys are going, and it's just like, whatever. Hey, a job's a job, especially when it pays you $500,000 to $1 million a year.
You have linebackers coach Court Dennison for Oregon.
That's right.
He was a big-time linebacker for University of Washington. And then we do remember when we had Wilcox, Josh Wilcox, the brother, and he said, which sideline will you be standing on? And he looked right. I mean, he just said it. Family. He's going to stand and support Cal.
So, as he should. I mean, that's your brother.
Well, of course. You always support family first.
But the practice fields at the University of Oregon are called the Wilcox Family Practice Fields.
Yes, like, they are.
It's a little awkward. Yeah. Like, because you had Dave, his brother, Josh, and Justin. Yeah. Like, four Wilcoxes that have played there. But now they root for Cal when they play the Ducks. Slippery slope there.
Is it?
I think it is. I think it was a. They were
easy
a little
for
bit
you
more
to
torn.
Say.
Yeah.
No, man.
You're right.
Blood.
Wait, hold on. You're
blood
right.
Blood
that
over.
That is easy for me to say.
Blood over logo any day.
Yeah. Or you just pour the blood over the logo.
You do this.
Because I bleed.
Sure.
My school colors. All right, Jude. And then, top of next hour, we got Northwest Nuggets as well. And we got some NFL. NFL stats to talk about, passing numbers and TV numbers, all in the 8 o'clock hours as well. Right now, though, it is 7:03.
What's hot?
Spooking.
What's hot and why is it cool?
They're cool because they're hot.
Hot and cool with Dusty and Cam. Your morning dose of positivity ripped from the headlines.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
Brought to you on the fan by Area Heating and Cooling. With more than 30 trucks in Portland and Vancouver, you won't have to wait on Area.
Feeling hot, hot, hot.
There will be at least one Nebraska transfer that won't head to Oregon State. See this one?
I did see this.
The Cornhuskers
denied
are blocking the Beavers as an option for running back Greg Bell to go to.
You think Nebraska's a little bit upset that all of Coach Riley's guys are now coming to Oregon State?
Yeah, well, I don't know how worried they should be because they suck.
Ooh, Oregon State or Nebraska?
Nebraska.
Oh, sorry.
All wait, right. One of those teams has a win, bro.
Yeah. I didn't say it. You said it. I was just trying to clarify.
But they blocked any Big Ten school, any future opponent in the non-conference, like within the next 3 years.
Sure.
And then Oregon State is kind of like this outlier that's in there. That's like,
so you can't go to Colorado. You can't go to Oregon State.
Right. You can't go anybody to Cincinnati in the Big Ten. Or a couple other ones or anybody in the Big Ten. So they're just, I think they're going, we've had enough.
Yeah.
Okay, enough. Oregon State, you've taken three. We're not going to make it four. No. And I don't think that this kid would have gone there anyway. Well, think about it. You have Jamar Jefferson, who's a freshman, Artavis Pierce, who's a junior. And then you have that freshman running back or the high school kid that just committed to Oregon State with the number 25 running back in the country. This kid probably was looking at the depth chart going, yeah, I don't really fit there anyways. So Greg Bell, for those of you that are wondering, will not be a transfer to Oregon State. But what that probably does mean is that they're just closing off that pipeline permanently.
Shutting it down.
And so anybody else who tries to transfer won't be going. What do you think of that? That like being the ability for these schools to do that.
Well, you have to set some sort of rule base so these guys don't have a freelance way of just jumping ship all the time. Maybe I do agree that there should be somewhat of a commitment. Yeah. I mean, Coach Frost just got there. So it's not like he's been there for 15 years and he's going to leave for another job. He wants those guys to stay there. It's a difficult thing. But if a guy doesn't want to be in my program, I'll stand by it and be like, fine, go. Get out of here.
Yeah.
But you're not going to go where? All right. Maybe it's a little bit bitterness. Difficult situation to be in for coaches and for players.
Look at that. That's like a... You sit there and you go...
Yeah, I can't imagine what I would do unless I was in those shoes.
Yeah, I understand the conference part of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like not going to a conference opponent. Mm-hmm. But saying, no, you can't go to Oregon State because a lot of guys are going there. That's insane. Because the reason why they're going there is because Mike Riley, who they chose Nebraska in the first place for.
This is the coolest story I've ever heard in my entire life.
Okay, this could have big and wide-ranging implications with the NCAA, but a Los Angeles County Superior Court judge has ruled that show cause penalties handed down by the NCAA violate California state law. This has to do with Todd McNair, the former USC assistant coach, who was given a show cause by the NCAA for his role in the Reggie Bush scandal at USC. Giving him money. Well, McNair's saying, man, this ruined my life. And a California judge says the NCAA can't sit there and tell people they can't work. So
no, can't do that.
This could be big.
You
on
can't do that.
Two different fronts. One, this could neuter the NCAA's ability to punish schools even more because this is precedent being set. And then two, Larry Scott wrote a letter to the judge saying that, hey, we have four schools in the Pac-12 that are in California, and if this is a law that you guys are going to enforce, they're out of compliance with the NCAA. They may not be able to compete in the NCAA. So USC, UCLA, Cal, and Stanford, he's playing the fear card on this one.
Well, if it does get to the point where the NC2A doesn't have power, which, by the way, not surprising that the NC2A is losing its power and its stranglehold on all these other schools. In fact, every conference seems it does do its own thing. It's now just a figurehead group. And this will be more and more we see this. And I wonder if it concerns, because Larry Scott did say those things publicly, said this is going to be a big concern for our schools. How do we stay in compliance? One judge decides to change the world for the state of California. What happens next?
Look, the NCAA kicking USC, UCLA, Cal, and Stanford out, and plus all of the other like FCS and other programs out. This could just wreck the NCAA again, and hopefully it leads to them blowing up their entire enforcement model because it sucks and it doesn't do anything for them.
Oh, hot, 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 hot.
Jimmy Butler has set a deadline for a trade. Reports say that he met with Tom Thibodeau and set a deadline for a trade for Friday. He wants to be moved by Friday, and then we'll see kind of where this thing goes. But Jimmy Butler could be gone and out of Minnesota by the start of the regular season, which we're a week away, man.
Yeah, what are we waiting for here?
I don't know.
Nothing ever happens good. Have you ever seen a team just hold on, have it happen and turn out good for either the player or the team?
No.
I mean, think about it. When Kyrie Irving left and they got it done, Cleveland, yeah, it wasn't great either way, but it benefited them. You see the Seahawks hold out, make it worse. Earl Thomas gets hurt. You get ridiculed. Now you don't get a second-round draft pick for him when you were offered that. Just let the guy – I mean, at some point in time, you got to just fish cut bait here.
Well, Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports, he added onto this report that one of the biggest problems that they have is they don't – like, teams are calling, but they don't know who to call. Because you have Tom Thibodeau, Glenn Taylor, and then Scott Layden. Thibodeau's the president and the coach. Layden is the GM and then the owner. And Thibodeau's the only guy that doesn't want to move him and his asking price is so high that they're like, so do we call the owner then and see if he'll make something happen?
Yeah, call the owner.
It's a mess.
Then he writes the checks.
Also, LeBron gives his kids wine.
Are they Catholic?
No. They're 11 and 14. He said my 11 and 14-year-olds
take sacrament. Maybe it's a church.
No, he said that's how mature they are. They'll be driving next week, too. Whatever dad and mom's having, put it on me, though.
Is that legal?
Don't put it on mom.
LeBron's just making up a whole set of laws for his own children that they don't have to apply to the rest of society?
He is the chosen one. Water into wine, folks.
It's a very LeBron thing to do.
Hey, but he can't get any respect.
Yeah. Get no respect.
Maybe that's how he gets some respect.
That's pretty cool, I guess.
Cardinals are shopping former Washington State Cougar Deion Buchanan. The safety was really good his first couple years in the league, but apparently the Cardinals want to move on from him. Does it seem like we had Eric Flowers yesterday with the Giants? It seems like a lot of teams are just saying, all right, we're done with these guys. Mid-season, they usually will hold on to him because you only have 53 roster spots to find decent players. Why is it happening now?
I don't know.
Man.
I don't. Sports.
And then...
I don't have an answer for that.
And then Pete Carroll saying a frustrated Rashad Penny is exactly what he wants, which is an odd move for a head coach to say.
You've already figured out who your best running backs are at this point. And Rashad Penny is a first-round pick, and maybe you look at the Seahawks moved up to make that pick to create the kind of pressure because over the last 2 years, they haven't been able to find a true running back because everybody's been hurt. And now they have some.
Well, that's good. And your offensive line's playing so much better, man.
Very good to have a lot of horses in the stable.
It's hot. Damn hot. Real hot.
It appears that the Oregon Ducks have escaped another big trap in the college basketball scandal as the Brian Bowen Sr., the son of Brian Bowen Jr., coincidentally, gave testimony in cross-examination yesterday. And he said he does not remember receiving $3,000 in cash from Oregon assistant basketball coach Tony Stubblefield during an unofficial visit in Eugene a year ago. That testimony on the stand was kind of what the defense was looking at when they were saying the whole Nike and Oregon offered a bunch of money. It's not just an Adidas thing. It's not just our client in the Jim Gatto trial. He said he does not recall that, but he did recall Oklahoma State, Creighton, DePaul, several other universities, including Louisville, giving cash payments.
Can I use I do not recall for the rest of my life and anything I do not recall?
Legally? Yeah, you can.
Yeah. I do not recall.
Made famous by Richard Nixon.
Yet I have it written down in documents with the FBI. I don't recall saying that.
Yeah.
I don't recall.
He was asked about if Stubblefield was at a meeting with him in Oregon last year. He said, yeah, he was there. Said, well... Do you remember the $3,000?
Yeah, but what do we care really? What do we really care about these $3,000, $1,500? Where's the shoe money that's been thrown around?
No.
This $3,000, nobody cares. No. That's not that big of a deal.
Oh.
I'm tired of hearing about that. I want to know it too. I think all of us want to know how much money, the shoe money, was being handed out. Where's the shoe money?
So this is the deal. So this is Jim Gatto, the Adidas guy. $100,000. Via Adidas. This Brian Bowen Sr. said that Oklahoma State offered him $100,000 plus an $80,000 car. That's an expensive car. Mm-hmm. And then Creighton offered him $100,000 plus a high-paying job for he and his girlfriend.
Perfect. Perfect.
Not bad.
You do what you got to do. It's called recruiting.
Hot and Cool on the Fan is brought to you by Area Heating and Cooling. Right now, Area has great discount offers on qualifying equipment from Trane. Start saving today at areaheating.com. Mario Cristobal, Chris Peterson, they both spoke yesterday on the Oregon-Washington matchup. You'll hear from them next on The Fan. All right, the Oregon Ducks and Washington Huskies meet up. Noon 30 is the kickoff right here on The Fan from Autzen Stadium in Eugene, number 7, visiting number 17 in all the land in college football. Our coverage starts at 8 a.m. With Ducks Game Day Extra. Extra half hour bonus coverage for you with Dirt, Anthony Newman, and myself. And this is the rivalry that we've been kind of anticipating, the game we've been waiting for of in the Northwest with these schools especially. And Mario Cristobal went on with Dirt and Sprague yesterday, and he discussed, you know, we have a couple cuts of things that really kind of popped out to me in his discussion with Dirt and Sprague. And first of all, the first two on this matchup and kind of getting up for a game like this during the college football season.
It's just an incredible opportunity. I mean, anytime you have the opportunity to play on a national stage against a program, you know, that's ranked as high as their program is, and taking into account the things we mentioned about the rivalry, I mean, could you ask for more as a college football player? Could you ask for more as a college football fan or coach? It's why you do it.
And you played in big games like this when you were at Washington, mm-hmm. right? Whether it was non-conference or in these games. And leading up to that week, there's got to be a palpable feeling that this week is different, this game is different.
Just another week.
A rivalry, though.
No, it's just another week. The mindset will tell you it's just another week. The papers will try to poke and prod you. Your coaches will stand up in front of you, and they will begin to tell you that, guess what, guys? It's not just another week. Now, on the outside, the perception is every week is a rival week. Because it's the Pac-12. Every game is important. Conference games, there's only 9 of them. I say only 9, SEC. But every time you get a big-time matchup, 2 1-loss teams, 2 top 25 teams, rankings that you say matter, okay, they don't really matter because the big one comes out in 2 weeks. But at this point in time, national relevance, this game is the next biggest on the stage. Why? Because it means that two teams are going to not their schedules and their season will go in completely different directions after this game. I mean, that's just kind of how it's going to look. You're going to look at one team that's going to say, ah, we're just on the precipice, or maybe we thought we were better than we were, and there's going to be another team that's going to move on and going to be considered a team that will not only win the conference, but could get some national play as a team that might make a run. So, yeah, it is significant, and there's a lot of things that's important about this game, and coaches want to downplay it, and fans want to rive it up because it means so much. But in the end, these guys are going to come out on the field, and it's going to be an Autzen, and they're going to know from the opening kickoff the feel and the energy. How it feels in that stadium, you're going to know it and you're going to feed off of it.
So is it palpable throughout the week, though?
Of course it is. Of course it is. We can try to hide behind it as players, but there is a sense, there's an understanding that even when you listen to, and I was reading an article from the Tacoma News Tribune that Taylor Rapp grew up in Bellingham, Washington. He grew up around Cougs and Huskies, and he understood growing up that it was all about the Apple Cup. Mm-hmm. But as he's showed up, and as he had a chance, his very first play, when he got a chance to play at Autzen Stadium, he felt it. He understood it. And those guys now believe it, and they see how much this game means.
Which is kind of funny that you hear, like, Chris Peterson, at all costs, doing the downplay of Autzen Stadium and the rivalry.
Yeah, it's an awesome college football venue, for sure. I mean, and like I said, I mean, I think the kids, they like playing in environments like that, whether it's, you know, going back to Atlanta and, you know, a packed place like that, or going down to Autzen. And I think it's a lot better than a half full stadium. I really do. At the end of the, like, you can hear better and all those things in those stadiums. But I don't think anyone, I think if you had your druthers, you'd rather go into what it's all about.
Well, he's right, because he played in the Dallas Bowl at the Cotton Bowl, and there was like 12 fans there. Mm-hmm. It was terrible. Yeah, you mean to tell me that when you are a part of a team, you get a chance to walk into Autzen Stadium and the crowd is pumping and the energy and the I always loved playing at an opponent. Just the smell, the feel, and just the sounds that you get from an away game in that kind of setting is, I mean, from playing at Autzen Stadium and Martin Stadium and getting a chance to mm-hmm. that feel. There is no other, the intimate stadiums that we have in the North, the South can't touch it. Mm-mm. There's no other place. Folsom Field is really good now that Colorado plays. Rice-Eccles is a very good spot to be. But I'm telling you, and this isn't a bias. This is from every coach and every player. We have the settings here in the North, and everybody wants to come from even loving to be a part of and go up to Martin Stadium and play there and playing at Autzen and having that energy. It's just, it's unquestionable. The players are just feed off of it.
It's pretty cool when you get rivalry games in college mm-hmm. football. And, you know, there is some too. Like you say, there the intimacy of the stadiums, like mm-hmm. Neyland Stadium at the University of Tennessee. I saw like 107,000 yeah. people or 102,000 people, whatever it is, packed in there for Tennessee, Georgia. It was a top 15 matchup, right? I mean, it was all of the hype in the world, bitter rivals. It did not feel as electric as what you get when you're at Husky Stadium or Reser Stadium, like when you have big game, night game at yeah. Reser and everybody's there and it's locked and loaded, top 25 or Autzen. Those, because everybody's so close together. It's a buzz.
I can tell you, I played Nebraska in my senior year. And then I also played at Autzen, and then I have certainly played in an Apple Cup, and then I also played in Notre Dame. I remember every snap of every single one of those games. Mm. I remember walking out and seeing and just the feel of the energy. I mean, the fans feel it too. You know what it's like when you get out there, and you can just feel the tension in the air. It's like it's amazing. It's like just batteries have been turned on compared to watching, I don't know, San Jose State come to your stadium.
Well, and there's an email.
You know immediately what that feels like. Oh, it's a San Jose State game compared to it's Washington.
And there's an email that went out yesterday from Rob Mullins, the athletic director at Oregon. And it just basically is, he sent it to fans just saying how amped the stadium needs to be. Mm-hmm. And kind of there's this tone being set by the University of Oregon from the athletic director to the coach. I saw videos of CJ Verdell and other players saying, we hope it's live. We hope it's as loud as possible.
We hope.
Rob Mullins is saying that he has no, it says here what, I have no doubt in my mind that it'll be the loudest the stadium on record.
Really?
They're going for types of things. And this is the athletic director sending out those emails. And I love that about this rivalry because we haven't had it be this, seemingly this close. Now, because of what we talked about yesterday, we've had one game within one score over the last, well, within three scores over the last, you know, what, how many in this matchup? 18 that we went back?
Yeah.
One in 18. And this feels like it's going to be a tight one.
I feel like this is going to be a battle. Well, let's talk
how,
somebody.
How fun is that, though?
Let's talk somebody.
I mean, how great is that that we get that kind of feeling amped up about this game finally?
Yeah.
Adam Jude of the Seattle Times, he's covered both the Ducks and now the Huskies. We'll get a preview, a health update, and kind of the closing of the doors this week of the Huskies program with Adam Jude next. Right now, those Buck with SportsCenter. All right, it's Duck Husky week. Number 7. UW heading down to number 17, Oregon. So we decided to bring on the man who used to cover the Ducks for the Oregonian, now covers the Huskies for the Seattle Times. His name is Adam Jude. Good morning, Adam. How you doing, man?
Good morning, fellas. I'm doing great.
All right. So
ask the tough question right out of the gate for him.
Oh, you want? Okay.
Give it to him.
Okay.
You've been waiting on this one. He's been waiting for it.
How do you send the information that you're spying on UW down to Oregon? How do you transfer that information?
Morse code.
That's so funny because I get that same question the other way from Husky fans. I suppose from the Oregon fans. But yeah, no, it's an interesting, situation for me. Yeah, having been down in Eugene and covered the Ducks for as long as I did. I can my first season actually put a picture out the other day with a good friend of mine in Portland, Jeff Smith. Our first time covering the Ducks in the Rose Bowl back in 2001 and during the Joey Harrington year. And so I've been covering college football since then. And it's been a lot of fun for me to kind of be on both sides of the rivalry. Obviously, seeing it from Oregon's perspective for so long there. But now this is my sixth season covering the Huskies. And my wife and I are both from the Seattle area, too. So we get it from this end as well. And it's a great rivalry. And you think about it, it's really fun this week because when was the last time both teams could feel really good about their chances going into the matchup? When was the last time both programs were at a point where they could legitimately say they're both competing for a Pac-12 title? So it's usually when Oregon is good, Washington is down, or when Washington is good, Oregon has been down. But right now we're at this rare point in the history of the rivalry where both teams are really good, and it's really exciting for both fan bases, I know.
I wanted to first get off with this, Adam, is kind of talking about Jake Browning, certainly in his fourth year, and a guy that, you know, I've been very, it's not just critical, but I've been saying, where's that moment for him? Where's that big game win that he's going to lead this team to? I think it's always the next game. It's always that next opportunity. You've been covering Jake. You've seen his growth and where he's been. Of course, you go back to 2016 when he had his unbelievable year and was Pac-12 Player of the Year. What has it been like this year for Jake and this offense and now getting in with Butch Hamden and kind of the differences of working with Jonathan Smith and now in the offense is how he's been doing thus far this year?
Yeah, it's been a little up and down, but I think a lot of that, you think about the September that they had a pretty tough schedule, obviously going down to the SEC country, playing a good Auburn defense, a really good Auburn defense. And then a couple weeks later, their Pac-12 opener at Utah. So I think people kind of tend to overlook that they played a couple of really good defenses pretty early on. And so that's going to skew the offensive numbers. And again, Browning wasn't spectacular in either of those games, but by no means do I think he was played poorly. I think he's been fine. I think he's been Jake Browning. You know, like you said, this is his fourth year, and I think he's been a pretty steady guy for the most part. Again, 2016 stands out. You know, he finished sixth in the Heisman voting that year, but he also had John Ross and Dante Pettis at their peak. And of course, for a quarterback to have a great year, you got to have great playmakers around you as well. And he didn't have that last year. Dante Pettis was banged up at the end of the year. And we're starting to see that again with a young receiving core. Aaron Fuller has been one of the biggest surprises on this team. I think he's number two in the Pac-12 in receiving going into this game. But I think Browning's been fine. I think the offensive line has been better the last couple weeks in front of him. And I think he's a guy who, in a game like this, he knows what it means. He's not allowed to talk this week, and he wouldn't talk much to fire up the rivalry anyway this week. But he knows what it's like to go into that stadium. And I think he's going to have a pretty good game against just a pretty average defense against Oregon on Saturday.
Adam Jude of the Seattle Times, the average defense of Oregon. Wow. Look at that one. As Duck fans are almost crashing their cars off the road right now. You know, you mentioned,
I got a big smile.
I know he's Cam's over there ear to ear grinning. You mentioned though that the receiving core, Aaron Fuller has been a great addition there. How much do you think that we just nitpick expectations with Jake Browning, and how has he handled that? Because if you look at the conference standings, yards per attempt passing, they average 9.32, which is only second to Justin Herbert in Oregon. How does he handle this pressure that is a little nitpicky at times of Jake?
Yeah, he's got a pretty good perspective on it. I talked to him for a long time this summer about it, and it was the best interview I've ever had with him. I was surprised, and you know, he was very self-aware and self-reflective. And you know, he's not built like Justin Herbert, right? He's not 6'5", he's not 6'6", 235 pounds. You know, he looks like a sports writer. That's not a compliment. And so, he acknowledges that. He's like, look, I look like the average guy going down the street, and it doesn't help that, you know, he's got a guy in Jacob Eason who transferred in that is 6'6", 240 pounds and can throw it to the moon. He's got a couple, you know, four or five star recruits that they just brought in behind him. So Husky fans, I call it the Browning fatigue. You know, their body clocks are just used to moving on after two or three years with a quarterback. You know, it's so rare to have a 4-year starting quarterback. It's never happened before. and modern history here at UW. So I think people just naturally were kind of ready to see the next thing, excited about the young guys, and, oh, here comes Jake Browning back. And, yes, from the outside, you know, I think a lot of people would love that. Of course, you'd love to have a four-year senior quarterback, but for whatever reason, Husky fans are pretty hard on their quarterbacks. I think the majority of Husky fans really appreciate Jake Browning and what he's done, but there are those out there that are nitpicking him, and he's handled it well, and like I said, I think he's been fine this year. Has he been spectacular? No, but by no means has he been bad either, and I think he's going to be fine on Saturday. I think it's going to be a really good matchup, and I think the Huskies inherently are pretty conservative on offense, so that's going to affect his numbers as well, but they've been moving the ball well the last couple weeks. They've been really efficient, and I think they're going to be able to move the ball well enough on Saturday as well.
The strength of the team has been the foundation, has really been the defense, and what Jimmy Lake and Coach Kwiatkowski has been able to build. Last week, they had that little bit of hiccup heading into the second half. I mean, call it what you want. I mean, they took foot off the accelerator. I mean, that's me being nice. I mean, they kind of let UCLA get back into the game. Now we're flipping into what I think is the best secondary Washington's ever had. And then a defensive line that needs to get to Justin Herbert. What do you think Jimmy Lake's going to have to dial up for this game? Because we know that when Oregon runs the football, that's what they're going to want to do. I believe the secondary can handle the receivers. How are you going to think that Jimmy Lake will try to contain Justin Herbert?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's the big question coming into this one for me, because the Huskies haven't been able to get a consistent pass rush. They've been barely able to get a pass rush in at all this year. I think they're 10th in the Pac-12 in sacks, and they don't have any sacks from their outside linebackers or defensive ends at all this year. Their leader in sacks is Taylor Rapp, a safety. So that kind of tells you, you know, the weakness of this defense, maybe the only weakness. But, yeah, I think they're going to have to get creative. They've been pretty vanilla up front the last couple of weeks, probably by design. Because they knew they could, you know, keep the ball in front of them, and they were just better than the offenses they were playing. But obviously a bunch of different challenges this week against Justin Herbert and a really good Oregon running a game. So I think they're going to have to get creative up front and change up their looks. You know, where are they going to bring the extra pressure from? We know they don't like to send, you know, five pass rushers too often, but you know, in third down situations, you might have to mix it up a little bit and get after Justin Herbert a little bit more with some blitzes. But that, to me, is the big question. Jimmy Lake, his first year as the defensive play caller, he's been good so far. But I think he is going to have to mix it up and get a little creative this week.
Yeah, Adam Jude, Seattle Times, follows the Huskies or covers the Huskies. Can you tell me who you think is that leader of the defense? I mean, I know you've written some good stuff about Ben Burkirvin and what he's been able to do, the acceleration and how who is that leader of that defense? I'm still trying to, I'm kind of looking for that guy to stand. I know it's Taylor in the back half, but is that Ben's team out there? He's been the guy that's been the catalyst and get everybody going?
Yeah, definitely Ben's one of those guys. Tevis Bartlett, too. His numbers don't pop out at you, but he's just a really sharp, you know, lead by example type of guy. You know, Jalen Johnson, as a 50-year senior on the defensive line, doesn't get a ton of notoriety. Again, doesn't jump out with you with his stats or anything, but he's a guy, you know, quietly leads that locker room as well. And then Greg Gaines, the big guy in the middle. You know, they lost Vita Vea, but I think Greg Gaines has just been such a steady guy for 3-4 years now. He's a guy everyone looks up to. He's played really solidly, obviously getting a ton of double teams, but you know, he's not going to be the Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year like Vita Vea was, but I think his importance and value on this defense is just as great as Vita's was last year.
You know, you mentioned Aaron Fuller and being a little banged up. We also saw Miles Gaskin kind of dragging his shoulder at the end of the UCLA game. I know they don't give injury updates, but what's your sense of the health of Washington heading into this one?
They say he's fine. Again, you know, at this point in the season, mid-season, when you're a running back, you're going to have something that's not 100%. And I'm not going to say Gaskin's 100%, but I'm not going to say he's questionable or anything this week. Chris Peterson, you know, quickly kind of shot that down on Monday, said he's fine. Miles Gaskin's going to play. And it was pretty funny seeing Saturday night, you know, in the Rose Bowl, too. I was kind of looking over the game film real quick, trying to find the play that Gaskin got banged up. It did look like he hurt his shoulder a little bit. And I tweeted out the video, and immediately Miles Gaskin shot back publicly on Twitter, said, "I'm fine. Don't put that out there. I'm fine. I'm playing. Don't worry about me." So I'll take him at his word. He's fine. He's going to play Saturday. I don't think he'd miss this game.
Now, I know Coach Peterson is downplaying the game and saying every game is a rivalry. I mean, the importance of Pac-12 wins, no question. this means more. The feeling of the players. I mean, I know they've been stifled a little bit, and I mean, you know these guys as good as anybody. When this week happens, what are the guys doing at practice? What are they talking about? I know the coaches are going to downplay it, but what do they really feel like in the locker room this week?
I think they want to win this, you know, more than any other game. They're not going to say that publicly, but they know what's at stake, and they were sick of hearing it 2 years ago, the 12 in a row on the other side of the series. Jake Browning has talked about that afterwards. We were sick of hearing that. You know, we know how much it meant to Husky fans to end that streak, and obviously they were happy to do it. You know, Chris Peterson, it was such an odd scene for me. I'll never forget it after the 70-21 win. He looked like a guy who had just lost the game. You know, he was very apologetic for putting up 70. Obviously, he was very close, very good friends with Mark Helfrich and still is. And I think he kind of knew the writing was on the wall after that game. So he was, again, just very somber, very apologetic after that game. And so maybe that plays into some of it for Chris Peterson. He knows that Duck fans are riled up about this rivalry and riled up about, you know, what happened the last time the Huskies went down there. And again, they're not going to fan the flames. They're trying to downplay it as much as possible. Chris Peters only made, you know, four players available this week for interviews. And so, you know, they're obviously, Chris Peterson's motto is don't talk about it, be about it. And that's never more true than this week and during a rivalry week. But again, to answer your question, I think they want to win this game more than any other game if you gave them some truth serum. And we'll find out Saturday. But I think it's a great matchup, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Biggest question mark for Washington heading into this game, where you feel that the game could hinge on a certain position group or maybe even player?
Yeah, I mean, for as good as Washington's defense is and has been, again, like we just talked about, can they get pressure on Justin Herbert? You know, for as good as that secondary is, they can't cover all day. Somebody's going to get open. Oregon has good enough athletes to do that. We know that's a great offense, and they're going to be able to move the ball a little bit. You know, so what is Washington going to do to get that pressure and to change up the looks up front to try to confuse Justin Herbert or just to make him feel uncomfortable a little bit? They don't have to take him down every time, of course, but get him to move his feet, get him off his spot, you know, change up the looks in the secondary. Because that, to me, you know, Justin Herbert's going as good as any quarterback in the country. And, you know, what are you going to do just to get him uncomfortable? And we haven't seen a lot of that from Jimmy Lake yet. Again, maybe part of that is by design. They haven't had to get too creative, too crazy. But I think they need to on Saturday afternoon at Austin Stadium.
Adam Jude of the Seattle Times covers the Washington Huskies as number 7 UW heads down a number 17 Oregon in that average defense.
That average defense. Adam. That was very good.
Thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Later. You know,
well, somebody's got to say a little something to get something going around here. There's a lot of nicing it up going on.
And you know
on.
What my favorite part about that? It comes from the former Oregon Duck.
Yeah, he does.
You know?
He mentioned something that's pretty cool about understanding what Coach Peterson meant. And during that last time, it was in Autzen, it was 70. We got to understand is that coaches are all in a network with each other.
Yeah.
And they appreciate the work and the effort that all these coaches do and the players. And you don't want to walk in. There isn't that hatred upon coaches. There is a respect level that you have for what it does to lead these guys and put in the work every week. And that's, I think that's kind of what you see is like, hey, we knew it was coming, but it's not like I sit here and enjoyed putting 70.
And I think that something that he mentioned, but I don't think people really understand is how tight Mark Helfrich and Chris Peterson are.
Sure.
And
the fans love 70.
When you know that you got one of your friends fired,
Man.
Think of that.
Yeah.
Because hard that was with. The nail in the coffin, 70-21. Special thanks to Adam Jube of the Seattle Times. You know, talk about rivalries and shots fired by the media. Des Moines, Iowa. The nice Midwestern folk of Des Moines, Iowa laid in to the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Listen to it next on The Fan. All right, we had Adam Jude, Seattle Times, for a Ducks Huskies preview.
Average, you know what? You're average, Dusty.
Yeah.
I'm an average guy.
You know what? I am. Average isn't fairly average.
But average isn't that bad.
Yeah.
A lot of us are average.
Marcus Greaves is in the building.
We were chatting in the
hallway. Former Oregon State Beaver. I saw he became Facebook official.
Official.
So congrats, Marcus.
You got the blue check.
No. Relationship.
Oh.
Yeah. You don't get a blue check on Facebook.
I just said Twitter.
No, Facebook official, man. Facebook official relationship status.
Official. I don't think I've checked mine.
Oh, really?
But that would be something if you got a check mark if you walked around just for being in a relationship.
That's right.
Does that make you cooler because you get a
Oh, you mean like this? But like the wedding ring the physical one that you wear on your finger?
I guess that would be
like that
mark.
One?
You know, I get crap from this. Why don't you wear a ring? I said, well, because my knuckle is. Because
I didn't win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. I've never been a ring guy. I'm not a jewelry person. Mm. And my fingers would always swell. And I couldn't get the rings off. And one I had to, it was awful. And so I said, I can't wear this. It hurts.
Yeah. Okay.
Average.
Look at this. I love this.
Oh boy.
Look at this.
Why are you so offensive to be average?
Browning will pay for the point. Well, and
if I hit 300, yeah. I'm below average, but I'm Hall of Fame.
No, you're above average. But
3 out of 10 is below average.
No.
But in baseball, it's above average. But in realistic points of view,
no,
50% is average.
I don't agree with that analogy.
50% is below average.
I don't agree with that one. I don't agree with that analogy.
Come on. Stick with me here. You said, okay, what's the stat that you found?
They are, if you were
Who's
to look.
Who's they? Who's they?
Oregon.
Okay, Oregon's
If you were
defense.
To look at the conference rankings of scoring defense, Oregon, 7th. If you look at total defense, Oregon, 5th. Then you could say, well, middle of the pack, that would be average. But they are 2nd in rush defense.
Mm-hmm.
They are, let's see, 3rd down conversions. I believe they are 3rd. They have not allowed a rush of over 30 yards this year. Red zone scoring, they are right in the middle of the pack as well. But if you look at a lot of their penalties and other stats, yeah, they are above average. Except for in total in scoring. So that's...
So it's right on the line of average.
Yeah, but if you watch them, you know they're... That's an above average defense that they're
If
playing.
You're talking the history of prior average...
No, I'm talking prior, about no. watching this team this year.
If you're taking the past defenses that Oregon has had, way above average.
Yeah.
Considering what they have come from.
Yeah, and if you look at... But if you watch their games this year, you're going, that defense makes plays when they need to as
but
well.
But no question, Washington's a better defense. So guess what? Yeah. You're going to just prove it wrong. You get a chance to do it on Saturday at the greatest start time in the history of sports.
12:30.
12:30.
We have audio that must be played. It is of a Des Moines, Iowa newscaster. His name is Andy Fales in Des Moines, Iowa. Mm-hmm. And they have a little bit that they do called Sound Off. And this is what Andy Fales decided to sound off on this weekend.
I'd like to start by extending our sympathies to our neighbors to the west. Call them the Bumpuses, the Cousin Eddies, whatever. Their given name is Nebraska, which is an Indian word for let the white people have this place. We don't want it anyway. Seriously, Nebraska, how you doing? Are you hurting? This was supposed to be the year that frost got you back to winning. As it stands, you may not have a win before there's frost on the ground. Now, we here at Sound Off don't like the idea of kicking our neighbor when he's down, no. We love it. This was supposed to be the return of the great big red. Well, you know what's big and red right now? Yo ass from getting spanked by every team from Wisconsin to Troy. Troy! Know what else is red? My face from laughing at the whole thing. I mean, this was your one thing, Nebraska. I mean, the one nice thing that people driving through your state could say as they stared at 7 hours of Jack Diddley squat. You want misery? I mean, take I-80 from Wyoming to Omaha. It'll be the one and only time you say, oh, thank God for Council Bluffs. Yeah, yeah. We know how you'll hit us back.
How many national titles does Iowa have?
Well, since the death of the VCR, we have as many as you do. Yes, Nebraska is Iowa's Uncle Rico. I mean, he was something back in the day, but now he lives in a van and his clothes and hair look like something off a sex offender registry. Memorial Stadium, huh? You mean like in memory of the good football that once took place here? Right now, you have lost 9 straight. We hear you're hung up on that one with Akron that got canceled. Well, don't be. They'd have flattened you like a turtle crossing the interstate. The Cleveland Browns have more wins than you, Huskers. Your victory fridge is still chained shut. It'll get better. I mean, of course it'll get better. The season will end. Right now you're losing every single week.
I'm triggered. Way to go.
Way to go.
That I'm guy, triggered.
Yeah.
That guy, you deserve an award for that. WHO TV, sound off, Q13.
Who knew Nebraska meant free land?
Yeah. The best part about that is
I'm going to get Big Red mad.
The guy trashing Nebraska is in Iowa. Like, is there any, Iowa. Is anybody talking and propping up Iowa on this one here? Like, as
the pinnacle of beauty,
this great state to drive through. I absolutely
pink
love
pink locker rooms and
well, they have the same number
uniforms.
Of national titles since the death of the VCR.
VCR.
There was so much little goodness just dropped in there.
It was well written.
Yeah. Andy Fales from WHO TV. What a great bit that one is. And, I felt like we needed to share that with the people, so you're welcome.
What's going to be even better is in 2 years when Nebraska just puts a can of whoop-off on them.
No. They play at the end of the year. That's the thing. They're not even playing this weekend.
I know.
Why is he getting his cheap shots in now?
It's what Iowa does.
Well, if you have any takes like that, go ahead and call us, 503-250-1080.
I challenge you
we'll
out there.
Just go ahead and
you
listen to
build your own take.
It's a rivalry week.
And you let us have it.
Yeah. It'll be like, what's that thing, Rome, the smack-off?
Mm-hmm.
We can have Oregon versus Washington doing that.
I don't think anybody's smart enough to do one down
smack.
Here. I don't think you got it in you. Don't steal it from somebody. Be original.
Okay.
Bring it.
Okay, go get it like David. Or
yeah, man.
David Fales? Why did I want to say that? Is that a kicker?
Yeah.
Oh, David Fales.
Like Vicker the kicker.
San Jose State quarterback. Andy Fales. Coming up next, we give you our Nugs. Northwest Nuggets next on The Fan.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.